Hey everybody, my name is Shane.
I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. I'm a late stage chronic alcoholic and junkie. My sobriety date is September 26, 2003, so I have t a little over 22 years of sobriety. So my story, my experience, strength, and hope. Like I said, I'm a late stage chronic alcoholic. I'm the guy that you read about or have read about in the Big Book, if you've ever opened the Big Book, and it's a great place to start if you're in early recovery too, to try to get into the doctor's opinion and stuff with a sponsor. That's a great suggestion. It worked, that helped me anyways. So my experience with alcoholism. I grew up, my childhood was brutal. My mother is a was a full-blown alcoholic. My father was a heroin addict who came back. Came back from Vietnam, and he was really messed up from the war. And he also they discovered he had schizophrenia. So, my early childhood just was saturated with booze. I grew up in Vermont. I mean, I kind of traveled around, but I grew up in Vermont, and my earliest memories of my mother were just her not coming home, 3, 4, 5 years old, pretty much choosing the drink over us, and choosing drugs and alcohol and men over her own children. I've seen what alcoholism can do to families from from that point of view, and I said I would never do that in terms of becoming like my mother, and I can't became just like her. I was taken away from my mother when I was 9 years old because of alcoholism. She was an unfit parent. State of Maine came in. I'm from Maine, and they took me out of our house, and I was put into foster care. So, didn't have a lot of direction, not a lot of guidance, a lot of, and I also had a big hole in my soul. And I was also very, just very lost, disconnected, felt very apart. I was in 5 different high schools in 2 years. I think I was homeless at 16, living in the woods. And, I found booze. I mean, I think the first time I ever drank, I said this at another intergroup meeting I got asked to speak at, but my first time trying alcohol, I think I was probably like 6 years old, and there was a big bikers party at our house. My mom would invite, up in Vermont, the New York biker clubs would come up, and she would, wherever the party was, always at my mom's house, or my mother was a part of that, and it was a huge biker party, and there was a keg in the fridge, and I was watching them drink out of it, and I decided, well, something's got to be fun in that big thing in the fridge. So I went over and I was taking hits off it, and one and run off and then come back, and I finally was passed, not passed out, I was laying down. This is my memory, so this could be all bullshit, but excuse my language, but this is my memory of it, is laying on my back looking up at the fridge with my foot in the fridge door, and this big biker just came up and grabbed me, and he put me up against the wall, and he says, "Your mother wants you to go to bed." And smoked marijuana. I think one of my mom's boyfriends smoked it with me when we moved to Portland, Maine, when I was like 7, and he smoked weed with me in the house. Thinking, he said, and his excuse was that, and this is 7 years old. I have a 27-year-old, and I also have a 12-year-old that's in the next room. And he said that I would find it on the streets. I guess 7-year-olds have a really good connection with weed on the streets, but so that's my life. It was saturated in alcohol and drugs, and I and then as I picked up the drink, and the drink, the drink was something that I used. A lot of people talk about this, and I kind of, because of my history with alcohol, I didn't like doing this, but a lot of people talk about alcohol being, them using it to anesthetize themselves, to like cover up feelings, emotions, and deal with life and feel. And I kind of, because of my history with alcohol, I never really, but looking back, hindsight, and having a little more, recovery time to kind of look back, I definitely used it to, as a way to deal and cope with the extreme trauma and the extreme level of pain and the hole in my soul. Somebody was, I think I was in a Zoom meeting recently, and somebody said alcohol was their religion. Alcohol, and even Carl Jung talks about this. Like, in there was a letter between Bill Wilson and Carl Jung, and he talks about how they use the same word for God and alcohol. They're the same in Latin. They're the same word. It's sort of like that. That's, I'm paraphrasing, but that makes sense to me. Like, I think I was looking for a spiritual solution early on, and when I stumbled across alcohol and drugs, I got really misled. And then I had the disease of alcoholism. So and then coupled with my emotional and traumatic abuse, it was like gasoline and fire, man. I was just like, and so, fast forward, my history with alcohol is that jails, institutions, and death, I've done all of them. I literally died. I think I overdosed. I was a big heroin addict, drugs, every drug you could think of, I've done. But I literally died. There was a I had a death experience. Went over to the other side. That's a whole nother meeting. That's a whole nother topic. But I had been drinking, and this was in like 2000, I think. So this was before fentanyl was fentanyl. And I did some fentanyl intravenously, and I died. And I came to, I remember, coming to, and I had a bunch of EMT guys over me, and cops. And I remember the first thing in my head, I was so far gone in my alcoholism, my mental delusion and the insanity of the disease, that I literally, and excuse my language again, in my head, this is what I said: you can't fucking kill me. Instead of thinking I just died, these guys brought me back to life. It was just this animal instinctual a darkness that was just keeping me alive. And that's where I was living. I was living on the streets. I was being shipped around to, in Maine, there's a bunch, I was in a place called the Serenity House four times. You're only supposed to be there three times. I'm a good con artist. I'm a good, manipulator. I got, and they shipped me across. And in the last 5 years of my drinking, I wanted to stop drinking so bad. I mean, I really wanted to. And the fear was that I was just going to die a drunk. That was my fate. This is my life. This is what I was born of. This is what I'm made of, and this is what I am. And that's such a lie. That's such a lie. So, my last 2 days of drinking. So I was on a good run on a weekend. I mean, when I drank at that point, I guess the way I look at it, and a lot of people talk about the obsession and the compulsion. What for me, I was sleeping in wet shelters. Up here, they call them wet shelters because it gets real cold in Maine, and you can't drink and go into homeless shelters, the regular homeless shelters. So there's this place called Milestone, and they would let the drunks, and we would go downstairs. They'd feed us. We'd go on the green mat, and they'd kick us out at 5. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, when I was woken up, or if I had even slept that night, the first thing that I thought about was not food, shelter, warmth. How do I get alcohol in my system? So there was no space between obsession and compulsion. It was purely get the drink in my system so that I can survive this day. And I mean, I did that for a long time. And my last drunk, I just, I'd gotten really beat up by it. I'd been drinking and drugging for 3 days straight, and it was coming down, and I got into a fight with a drug dealer that just kicked the crap out of me, broke my nose, broke my jaw. It was a Sunday in the Old Port, Maine, which is kind of like now is considered, I don't know if you guys have know Portland, Maine, but it's become a nice hubbub. But the cops came, were there right away, and I was bleeding out of my nose, my jaw was broken, and they were. And of course, I was street prone, so I was like, "I'm not telling you anything." And they're like, "Clean up the blood," and I'm cleaning up the blood, and it's coming out of my nose. And So finally, I walked off and I went to the hospital, basically in my head thinking I'm trying to get more drugs. That was really all I was, that's where I was at. I wasn't thinking about getting healed up or anything. I was thinking about more. That's how I was. And I came to a little bit later that day, and they had me in this back room next to some like oxygen tanks, and I knew I was like, I'm homeless. They're kicking me out of my street. My nose is broken. My eyes are all black and blue. My jaw's broken. And I got nowhere to go. So I made it hustle down to Milestone. And then I decided one of the things you can do, one of the things that I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but one of the things you could do to get a nice safe place to stay is to go to the hospital and say you're going to kill yourself. And they'll take you into the hospital, take you into a psych ward. And so they took me into the psych ward. They were hooking me up with for every 4 hours, give me meds. And I'm like, man, I'm like, this might work. I could, maybe I'll stay here for the rest of my life. Yeah. Kicked me out of there. And, my last, I remember my last drunk, I was like, or whatever, that was the last, I just got up the next morning and I said, I can't. And I went upstairs once again into another detox. I think it was my 15th time that year. And I got asked to go into this house. It was a halfway house, and didn't think I was going to stay sober. Had no clue, just one foot in front of the other. And one of the things that happened was is I started doing the program again. I became a house manager in that. I really did a lot of work, and I saw these little things happen. And that's the biggest part about alcoholics is that contempt prior to investigation that we have. We'll sit here and tell you how this is not going to work for us and not do anything about it. And what the way that I learned about, a lot of these solutions was empirical evidence, because I didn't have the brain to like really, I was connected spiritually. I had all that stuff in me, but I was lost. And so I would do things like, I remember I wanted to drink it 3 months. I mean, bad. I almost did. I almost got drugs, and luckily I made it back to the house. I called my sponsor, and after I got off the phone, my sponsor didn't say anything important, but I didn't want to drink. And that was something. It was like these little nuggets, these little, because the brain can be rewired, and that's about the psychological change. That's the psychic change that they talk about. And the only way that you can change that, in my opinion, is to do the work that's asked of us in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it happens. It's not something that I'm just doing. I'm not here on a Thursday, afternoon on a Zoom meeting because I want to sell you something. I'm telling you that I'm sober because of this program, and that's why I'm here. So I've been sober for 20, like 22 years, and one of the things that happened to me recently, I sponsorship, I have a great life. I have a beautiful, children, very safe, and a business, and all those things. And I had a situation 6 months ago where I had a panic attack, and it was brutal. I mean, I woke up and I felt like I had a bag over my head, and has a lot to do with traumatic stuff. And if anybody tells you, here's, I just want to say this on a side note, that's not AA. It's like everything's AA. I'm sorry. If you're an alcoholic and you're like, don't compartmentalize and say this is AA and this is, we're all one holistic piece. So remember that if you this is working through all that stuff, and so that's why I'm bringing it up. But anyways, and so I had this situation where it really knocked me, and I got cut, and I got cut off from my higher power. My higher power is what keeps me sober, because I know that only because I try to stay sober under any means necessary within the capacity of this body, within the capacity of shame, and I couldn't. And I'm sober today, and so that's evidence. That's all the evidence I need, and then I can go off into other stuff for tangents about spirituality. But that being said, what came in behind it is when I lost connection with my higher power and felt abandoned and scared and really lost, was the thought of drinking again. My brain went to, you know how you can get rid of this? You can drink yourself to death. Because I don't think about drinking now as something where I'm just gonna relieve some, like it's gonna be emotionally supportive. I'm gonna have some sort of like I'm gonna die. And so I have to be ready to dive. And that was, and it kept coming up. And so what did I do? I got back into meetings. The anxiety was there. I kept, acceptance was, just saying acceptance. And it was scary, very, very scary because, I have everything to lose and I know exactly what's going to happen. And yet my brain still wanted to kill me. So I know what I got. And,
5 minutes, Shane.
thank you. And yeah, so I got back. I've always had sponsorship and connection, and and I'm kind of coming out the other side of that. And one of the things that I feel is really important for me, and the reason that I went through is to be able to convey to other people whether or not you're, because it was like early sobriety again. And I gotta say, like, there's a lot of things I want in life. But I really kind of forgot how much I wanted to be sober when I first got sober. And when you're obsessing about alcohol and you think you're going to lose everything and die, that's when you remember again. And it made me remember. And it also, but it also showed me that there are times, and this has been the case throughout my history with my recovery, that you're going to come, this is my opinion, you're going to come across something, no matter how good you are in AA, no matter all the best things that you do, the best things you speak, the biggest smile you have, the greatest, there's gonna be times where you're gonna need to ask for help. You can't, this program doesn't run on people just giving help. It's reciprocal. Everybody wants to be the one that has it together in the room. And I didn't have it together. And I was really scared. And I had people help me. And I was willing to ask for help. And that's how this program works, and I'm really grateful for it. And I'm grateful that I'm alive today. I still have the disease of alcohol in my daily reprieve. And I still come across anxiety and strength. But I'll tell you, man, they talk about the stuff in the big book, and there's other lots of other literature. Pain is the touchstone to growth, man. It's not, I thought Alcoholics Anonymous early on, I thought it was going to give me what blackouts and shots of heroin gave me. And it does not do that. If that's your expectation of what Alcoholics Anonymous is going to do for you, it's not going to happen. It'll give you pieces of serenity, but it will put you right smack dab in the middle of your life. It will allow you to feel, it will allow you to process, and it will allow you to grow. But it will not help you to circumvent life, escape life, or, and that's what I don't want. I didn't want to be here. I was an alien on Earth and I did not want to be here. And I still have a hard time with that. But I'm just really blessed to have breath and life and sobriety and all these things. If you come up, if you're late, if you have time under your belt and you're having a hard time, do not play that game with yourself. Because a other one thing is that, like, everybody needs to see that people are vulnerable and need help. This isn't a game, and it also allows other people to be of service to you. And I'll end with this, like, just saying that, I was thinking that there was one time I was going through a hard time, and I went up to this guy and I was telling him about it, and he goes, Shane, he goes, you know how you feel when somebody asks you for help and you're able to be there and to be of service to them. I said, oh yeah. He says, why would you deny that to somebody else? So remember, it's a reciprocal process. And the honesty and the willingness and the openness is what is the meat and potatoes for me, baby. And I don't know why I said baby, that was totally lame, but whatever. Anyways, thanks a lot. Have a great day, guys.